And welcome to this beautiful Saturday afternoon. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, bringing you new choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We come your way every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. That's richarddugan.com. RichardDugan.com. Somebody made a, I'm not sure if it's a terrible joke, I chuckled a little bit when they said, oh, you have a double D. That is correct. All of that humor aside, not mine. I didn't write it, but there you go. This is a program that comes your way, and we provide you information. We provide you insights and different concepts and ideas, hopefully, that maybe you haven't thought of before. Hey, maybe you have, and we're revisiting it for you. There's a reason for that. And every week that we have our guests on this program, we talk about a wide variety of different things. Today is no exception to that rule, if you will. Today we are going to be talking with the co-authors of The Passionate Mind Revisited. It's going to take us on a liberating inner journey that can transform the way we look at ourselves and the world. And I have to tell you that in the last couple of weeks, I have been pondering this whole concept of, I guess the best way to put it, I can't find any other phrasing, and this is already, I'm using it. It's been created long before I ever came along. Humanity's purpose. What in the world are we doing here? And it's not on an individual level. I'm not sitting here going, who am I? How did I get here? Where am I going? I'm asking, what are we doing as a people? Where are we going? What are we trying to achieve? And so I think that today's program is going to give us some insight into that as well. My guests are the co-authors of this work, this particular book that we're talking about today, and all of the other materials available at their website. And Joel Kramer and Diana Alstad, I want to thank you so much for taking time to share with us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting us.
Now, let's get started. First of all, The Passionate Mind Revisited. There are many who have lots of definitions of what the word passion and passionate mean and where that comes from or where it should be coming from and where it ought to be focused on. Can you give us a definition of that word?
You know, I'm going to give us the way we use it. We use the word passionate to mean an abandonment, a giving yourself totally to it, allowing your interests, your passions, your true curiosities to pull you into what you're moving toward.
And your cares and your concerns. And
and if anybody if anybody were to go to your website, which is joeldiana.com, that's it right there, joeldiana.com, joeldiana.com, they're going to find a lot of information there. I mean, you've written a number of books, including this, your latest, The Passionate Mind Revisited, and so I have to conclude, I hope correctly, that there is actually a book out there called The Passionate Mind.
Yes, that was done in 1974 is when it came out, and it achieved a certain modicum of popularity, and in rereading it and redoing it, the publisher wanted us to do another edition. We looked at it carefully and saw that in the 30-some years more, actually, that passed, the world has changed, we have changed, the necessities that are demanding of us have changed. So we decided to write a short little book that would emphasize these changes, and is our tendency, the short little book turned into a long, thick book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, as long as it's not War and Peace, we're okay.
No, no War and Peace.
Well,
The Passionate Mind was written by Joel alone, in the early 70s. It was lectures that he had been giving in his yoga, weekend yoga seminars on awareness, spirituality, human nature, the meaning of life, and those were compiled into The Passionate Mind. The subtitle there was A Manual for Creatively Living with Oneself, and the subtitle of the new book that he invited me to co-author with him is expanding personal and social awareness, because we wanted to bring the focus, the inner inquiry focus, keep that, deepen it, and then bring it out also into the social arena to discuss the global concerns and survival issues and challenges and evolutionary challenges that are facing us today, and also to bring in a lot of the new things that have been discovered since then around our genetic conditioning as we are animals, and to include that, which most books on spirituality don't get into that kind of thing, and just bring in a lot of other types of viewpoints, like my viewpoint. I was one of the early feminists. So bringing the social dimension and me into the book is partly one of the things that made it expand.
Well, the two of you obviously have been involved in this kind of work for a number of years.
35, yes. 30? We've been together 35 years.
And that's astounding, and we want to touch on more of that as well as specifics in The Passionate Mind Revisited and where you've come from and where you'll be going. We're going to do that as we continue our program, Tell Me Your Story. And just a reminder, this program is usually live on a Saturday afternoon from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we are live here on this beautiful Saturday after a week long of rain here on the Central Coast, and we've made it through, folks. We had enough spacing between each of those wonderful storms. The hillsides here in Santa Barbara and the county are green. The yellow flowers are popping up. It's going to be an incredible spring, and I'm hoping that it's going to be a beautiful and smoldering free summer and fall. Please, let's keep it that way. We're going to continue our program here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World in just a moment. Stay with us.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Tonight, the number 21-ranked Westmont Warriors return home to continue first-round Golden State Athletic Conference play as the Warriors take on the Vanguard University Lions. And you can hear all the action live on AM 1290. I'm John Martini. Join me tonight for exciting Warrior basketball from Murchison Gym. It all starts with the pregame show at 7:15, tip-off 7:30. Vanguard at number 21 Westmont here on your Warrior station, AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share. A talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and Fast Forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
I love AgriTurf. Yes, I do. They have everything for my garden. It's true. Over 50 years in business and still going strong, Bob's sons have taken over. That's George and John. Barbara is a beauty and has solutions for all your garden needs. And if you ask her, she'll even diagnose your leaves. AgriTurf has fertilizer, soil amendments, power equipment, and shears. You can have them come to your house if gophers have driven you to tears. Compost tea is brewing and will make your garden shine. Organic solutions at AgriTurf of every sort and kind. AgriTurf, oh AgriTurf, you have won my heart. Morning coffee and a donut make yours the place to start.
AgriTurf has everything your garden needs. On Las Positas and Modoc, open Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5 and Saturday from 7:30 to 2. Call 569-2257 or on the web at rosecare.com.
Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, your host here on a Saturday afternoon. Programs are archived on my website, which is richarddugan.com. The website, richarddugan.com. Go to the radio shows page. That's the link right below schedule. And you can listen to all the programs that we've done since the first part of September of 2007. Incredible lineup of guests that we've had and an incredible lineup of guests we have coming. Some I haven't even scheduled yet, so I don't know who they are, but it will be pretty incredible. Today is no exception to that rule. Joel Kramer and Diana Ahlstadt are my guests, co-authors of The Passionate Mind Revisited. It is, shall we say, the continuing journeys of Joel's original work, The Passionate Mind. And we're talking about that and the work that you two have been doing for 35-plus years collectively and individually. I was noticing here, Joel, in your bio that you have an extensive education from several different universities, both in psychology and philosophy, an interesting combination.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your philosophy, where you're coming from, and how that's changed for you over the years.
Well, if I could do that in a few minutes, I wouldn't have gone to college.
Okay.
All right. You know, basically, I started going to college and became what might be called a formally trained philosopher, meaning I learned how to make distinctions, learned how to do arguments, learned how to, pick apart an argument, et cetera, et cetera. And after a period of time, I realized that they weren't answering the basic questions that I was interested in. And the basic questions were, in my opinion, four simple questions. The first one was, what's going on here, really? The second one was, can I even know? The third one was, well, if it's possible to know to some degree at least, how do you go about finding out? And the final question was, how do I fit into the scheme of things, if there is such a thing as the scheme of things? And instead of following formal philosophy at this point, I went into psychology to see how the psychological structures affected what I was thinking about and found that interesting and eventually left academia because I felt some real limitations there and I began to be more interested in taking off on my own and later on, very quickly later on, with the help of Diana, who has a doctorate from Yale and who is, if I might be so bold to say, extraordinarily bright and doesn't let me get away with anything, so that she is always there. And, together we were trying to figure out what was going on. In these days, what has changed in these days is I've been becoming very concerned about the direction our species is going, what's going on in this planet, how in the world can we get ourselves out of the messes we find ourselves in, and have been directing our attention into that arena. That's what The Passionate Mind Revisited focuses on more.
Well, it sounds like you and I have somehow been collaborating somewhere in the ethers, because that's exactly where my mind has been for the last, most specifically, as I mentioned at the front end of the program, for the last 2 weeks, but obviously much longer than that, but somehow it's gotten honed down even more so to where I'm wondering, where in the world are we going? Because I thought as a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s that we'd be somewhere else other than where we are, but we're really not that far from where I was as a kid growing up. Watching the Jetsons cartoons, thinking, that's part of where we would be. So now I'm asking that question of today, where are we going to be in 40 years, 50 years? Are we going to be doing the same things that we're doing today?
We can't.
And you say we can't. Why not?
Because what we're doing today isn't viable.
Okay.
We can't continue doing what we're doing and be viable, basically.
There's a phrase, a word that's being used, and maybe they're interchangeable to some degree. It's sustainable?
Sustainability is a large part of it, but it's not merely sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
It is sustainability that offers opportunity and real promise to human beings. You know, did you ever see the movie, you know, where they had, you know, people in batteries? What was it?
Matrix?
The Matrix.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Well, you know, you can sustain people in a chicken coop and have billions and billions and billions of them for short periods of time. That's not going to make life work.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be sustainability plus opportunity plus viability, you know, plus ways that human beings can feel that they can add to the progress of where humanity has brought us. One can argue intelligently whether we've had any progress at all. You know, I think we have.
Well,
actually.
Okay.
Sustainability plus regeneration of things we've destroyed also.
Right. And in the process of doing that, we realized, and, you know, this is a very difficult concept, but we realized that the old worldviews, and by worldviews I mean something both simple and something abstract. A worldview is a way a mind looks through the world and integrates its experience. And the old worldviews that have been passed on to us through history, through books, through et cetera, in our opinion, really aren't cutting it. They're just not doing it.
Well, what I can tell you is that I have verbalized similar sentiments on this program that I have been feeling, ever since we've been doing this program in particularly, that there is another way to live. I don't know what that way is, but I am bound and determined to find it. And if the ways in which we've been doing things worked, we would be much further along. Ergo, the conclusion is, they don't work, so we must find another way.
Well, that's a very, very good syllogism. It's, you know, you can't argue it.
Well, now, Diana, let me ask you about where you're coming from, where you started from, and how much that's changed for you in light of your connecting up and joining with Joel.
Well, we've both influenced and transformed each other a lot in 35 years. I was on the East Coast in academia teaching. After getting a doctorate at Yale, I taught at Duke, and I was an activist, one of the early feminists, and, you know, anti-war, involved in that kind of political, radical thing, while Joel was in the counterculture out west in Berkeley and Esalen, doing his exploring. So when we combined forces in 74, I was interested, I had been very interested in psychology, so I applied his approach to yoga, which is an evolutionary approach that's based on feedback. It's non-authoritarian. It's not based on following other authorities as much as self-discovery, self-exploration, learning to read and listen to your own feedbacks in your body and mind. It's a mind-body approach. I applied that to my psychological interests and created the yoga of relationship and got Joel involved in developing that with me, and we've taught that for many years. And then we got involved in writing the Guru Papers, Masks of Authoritarian Power, this book on hidden authoritarianism, focusing on some of the pitfalls that we discovered afterwards in Eastern thought and Eastern spirituality, Western also, and daily life, where hidden authoritarianism lives in our addictions, our love relationships, our family relationships. We tried to unmask it in a lot of places. So we've been just continually creating together and evolving new perspectives and insights. And Joel wants to talk right now.
Just for a second. Mm-hmm. The reason that Diana's addition of the yoga of relationship became so important to us is we began to see human beings as capable of the most extraordinary things in art, in music, in science, in athletics. You name it, human beings have been remarkable. There's one arena where we've been far less than remarkable, and that is in the arena of relationship between human beings, you know, between cultures, between religions, between countries. You name it, we're very primitive in how we relate with each other.
Well, I know in doing this program, talking with the diversity of people that we've had on this program, that everybody seems to be pretty much in sync along those same lines. That and we do need to make some adjustments, some changes, and I think that We see the way certain aspects of our social structure are breaking down, and they keep wanting to be rebuilt by the people that are running them, not realizing that in time, I'll use the metaphor, the horse and buggy is not going to work for us. And I'm not saying that we need to move to the gasoline-powered car. We need to go to something else. But along the same lines that as we progress forward, old ways of doing things go by the wayside.
You know, where we think, you know, where we think we differ from, you know, what a lot of people are saying, and I think what they're saying is understandable, and, I do see why they're saying that. A lot of people see, and I think this is true, that what human beings need is a real social revolution of one sort or other, a real revolution that we relate to each other. And for many of these people, what this entails is getting rid of things that make us less viable. So let's get rid of competitiveness. Let's get rid of ego. Let's get rid of self-centeredness. Let's get rid of the protection of privilege. Let's get rid of all of these things that are causing the world to break down. So basically what a lot of human beings are saying, let's be different than who we are. And what we're saying is something very different. We're saying that we are competitive. We do have egos. We are concerned with our own privileges, like it or not. And the question is not, how do we get rid of this, but how do we become more aware of this so that we can use this in viable instead of destructive ways, that we don't see human beings as individuated parts of what existence creates, as all of a sudden becoming loving and giving and, totally non-self-absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the distinctions that we make, for example, is that, one of the paradigms say we have to love everybody. Well, as far as we're concerned, love is a very personal, very direct, very intimate thing. That, you know, the metaphor that I like to use is, I can't love the polar bear that might want to eat me, but I can care about him and his environment and the world that needs him to survive in order for all of us to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think that, you know, we make a very big distinction between loving and caring, and we make other distinctions along the line that we think are somewhat different.
When we, as we continue this program today, I want to talk more about the differences that you feel the two of you have made over the years, and what kind of changes you will leave behind, if you will, as we continue talking about The Passionate Mind Revisited. That's the latest work that they have out, and the other works that the two of you have been involved in, and we're going to continue talking about that here on Tell Me Your Story. New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Right now, I want to bring to our phone lines, as we take just a brief moment, to talk with Candy Hoff. You've been hearing her commercials here on the program. And Candy, you have a special event coming up this week, correct?
Yes, I do, Richard. It's my first published book. It's Angels of Faith at Paradise Found, the New Age Bookshop on 17 East Annapurna Street at 7 p.m., Thursday, January 28th, I'm going to be signing my new book, Angels of Faith, which is a celebration of the divine spark within us all.
Well, what I can tell you is that it is not a big book. It's not a long read, so you don't have to worry about that. Although, I'll be quite honest with you, Candy, I have the book in my briefcase. I pull it out, and for 5 or 10 minutes, I will read a few lines and go through a few pages. I haven't finished it yet. And it's not that hard to read. It's like, okay, Richard, you have to sit down and take a half an hour, because I don't even think it takes that long to read. And it's beautiful story.
It's I've had a lot of people say that they return again and again to the story because it's channeled material and the words are picked in order to open up our hearts to be able to shine that divine light outside into the outside world and be able to live authentically and transparently and honestly. And so I'm not surprised that you haven't finished it yet and are lingering on that book.
Maybe it's because I'm supposed to, it's almost like, okay, do I start back from the beginning again? And maybe that's the case. Tell us again, give us all the particulars about this Thursday.
Okay, it's at Paradise Bound. It's the New Age Bookstore on 17 East Annapurna Street, and that's downtown Santa Barbara, about only one step away from State Street. It's on this coming Thursday night, 7 p.m., January 28th. The book is called Angels of Faith, and I'm going to be doing book signing, and also I'm going to be doing a talk on not only my near-death experiences, which the book is based loosely on, but also my experience that I had as a walk-in experience, which lots of people want to know more about, and they want to find out more of the particulars about that. So that's all going to be contained in this coming Thursday in a very enjoyable and informative evening at Paradise Bound.
And the weather should be terrific, and I'll let you let our listeners know also that if you'd like to hear more about Candy, you can certainly go to our website, richarddugan.com. She's been on our program. Scroll through. I believe you were on in 2009, and we look forward to having you on in the next month or two to talk more about your book, how it came about, as well as your near-death and on walk-in experiences.
And if anybody else wants to find out any more information, my business is Angel Healing House. So go to www.angelhealinghouse.com.
Angelhealinghouse.com.
Thank you so much, Richard, and I hope to see everyone there.
All right. Thank you very much, Candy.
Take care.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, as we go back to our guests, who are Joel Kramer and Diana Alstad, and their book is The Passionate Mind Revisited, and it's a joy to have the two of you on the program to talk more about this concept, but also there's a feeling I get from the two of you that this is so all-encompassing. Some might look at you as saying, well, these are just a couple of hippies from the 60s, and they're just still carrying on, and they don't know when to say when and let this go. But the reality is that what the two of you have individually and collectively has continued to grow, and your concerns continue to grow. Otherwise, you wouldn't have written this book in the first place.
I was never a hippie in the 60s. I was at Yale and Duke.
Well, that's true. I've seen your bio, but then again, there would be those who would speak in that context, and obviously be wrong.
Okay, right.
But the two of you are very concerned. I mean, it's not enough to say, well, you know what? I'm going to live my life and do the things that I'm going to do, and when I'm gone, I'm gone. And what difference does it make what I leave behind because I'm gone?
Well, that's right. We wrote this last book because we are very concerned about species survival, humanity's survival, what's happening on the Earth, and feel it's touch and go. It's an evolutionary drama that we need to be creative to solve and use our natural intelligence that's innate, but that's been blocked by a lot of worldviews that contain hidden authoritarianism, which is what our last book was about, or that aren't as in touch with reality as they need to be in order for us to deal with reality. So the book is partly about worldviews and what worldview is more likely and what are the implications of the worldview that you have in terms of dealing with things.
So let me put the hard question to the both of you and have you each answer the question. So why should we be concerned about the continuation of the species? I mean, isn't it going to come to an end eventually? What would be the purpose of continuing on for another 1,000 or 100,000 years?
You know, in an ultimate sense, there is no argument that convinces anybody that they should be concerned or should not be concerned. Either you are concerned or you're not concerned. We happen to believe that it's genetically programmed into us to want our species to continue, to want our children to do better, to want to see out of curiosity where this remarkable animal can take us. No one can convince anybody that that's the way to be. But if you find that that's where you are, and I think many people do find that's where they are, you know, we believe that we're genetically conditioned to do this. A species that wants to survive has more chance than a species that doesn't. So, you know, that there is no pet answer, no absolute answer to that, no argument that can convince the opposition that they should care. Either you care or you don't care.
Mm-hmm. But here again, one's worldview does affect what one cares about. Like if you are a cynic or a pessimist or a nihilist, or you think human nature is corrupt and selfish, you feel maybe, oh, we shouldn't survive. But if you have a different worldview that has a different evolutionary approach and looks at human potential and reasons why it's blocked so far and how it could be liberated, we call it possibilist. We call ourselves possibilists instead of optimists.
Mm-hmm.
Then that fosters care, so that your ideas, your attitudes, your emotions foster care or not caring. Nihilists don't care, but they have certain beliefs that cause them to detach and not care. The same with cynics.
So let me ask you about the, because I like that concept, the possibilist. It's keeps you going too far to the optimist, but also going too far the other way to the pessimist. It kind of keeps you in a bit of a balance.
It also keeps you more in the present in mm-hmm. terms of what is possible now, because to be a pessimist or an optimist is to have an opinion about what the future will be. And that opinion can, if it's naive optimism, make you not respond to challenges in the present. And if it's too pessimistic, it makes you not respond either. So possibilism keeps you in the present, engaged with reality, and always the wondering what's possible here. Where's the potential? You see, it's a whole different focus.
How do we balance those two elements? I don't mean optimism, pessimism. I mean living in the moment, living now, and being concerned about the species' future.
Well, that is precisely what our chapter on time is about. We actually have been quite concerned that the ideal that was promoted in the 60s of be here now, then later in the 90s, and currently the power of now, and mindfulness and always be here now, and the East says things like, oh, the past and the future are illusion, they're products of thought, and we feel absolutely not. The evolution is real, the cosmos exists in time. Time's a dimension of reality. That's a non-realistic, non-scientific view of the world, that we feel that there's no way to not be in the now, but the now contains the seeds of the future and the causes from the past. The now contains the past and the future. And unless our species develops a more sophisticated time awareness, of which our fabulous brain is capable, with more awareness of future consequences and more care and concern about them, there's not going to be a now for us to be trying to be in all the time. So the balance, that's what our chapter is about.
Now, Diane, what you just said, Diana, I understood every word you said. It makes perfect sense to me. And yet the way you said it, I'm going, wow, this sounds kind of like, you know, something that some guy on the street in the 60s would have said, you know, and just in one of those weird voices would have you. But I understand exactly what you're saying. And I want to give you sort of an analogy that I came to. I was recording a program or a talk with one of my former guests, and he was talking about being in the now. And I'm watching my computer screen. Now, I record digitally. And there's a white line that denotes the instant of the audio being recorded onto the computer, being turned into digital signals, okay? And the thought came to me that that white line is the moment of now. But the moment it is visually represented by the sound wave, it's no longer the now. So the words that are being heard at the instant that we're hearing them, we're no longer in the now. And it's like, it's that quiet space. It's that, what is it they say, that what makes up matter is not the atoms or the particles, but the spaces between?
Well, that's true with astronomy, too. When you're looking at a star 5 billion miles away or light years away,
mm-hmm.
you're looking at the past. So the past is contained in the now there too.
Yeah. And certainly there are those of us who we've been struggling with these concepts, and we're getting better at wrapping our brains around it.
We feel we need to have a balance between being in the now and taking concern for the future and realizing what things in the past have caused it. And some people call it being timeless, being out of time. I think that's a very important respite to have from a harried life where you're always goal-oriented and rushing in time. But we need both in our daily life. We need to be functional in time, and then we need to have respite where we're just only in the moment. But usually what Eastern mysticism and mysticism in general means by in the moment is sensual.
Mm-hmm.
In the sensual moment, like in the be aware of the sunset or your breath or your feelings in your body or the blade of grass, it's what you're hearing, seeing. But they omit thought. They say, oh, but if you're thinking, that's not in the now. We're saying, well, you can't just omit thought. Thought can be in the now, too. Everything's in the now. That's not the point. Are you going to limit the now to your sensual awareness, or are you going to, which now do you want to be in? Do you want to be in the social now that includes the war in Iraq,
uh-huh.
that includes global warming, that includes all kinds of things? How are you going to limit the now? Who says where here stops and there starts?
Mm.
You know, does it stop here in my sensual awareness of the blade of grass or my breath, or does it include the globe? You know, this is very arbitrary, this be here now. Who says where the now stops and starts and the here starts and stops? We're trying to say we need an intelligent, creative view that's more encompassing
mm-hmm.
of the now, that includes an awareness of where we will be going in the future if we want to survive.
Now, the two of you have incorporated a technique, a practice, yoga, and you have yoga of relationships. And I want to find out from the two of you how that plays into all of this. I mean, I know what yoga is. I'm familiar with the different practices of yoga. There's hatha yoga and then, of course, a long list of them. But yoga is just what it is. The union thereof, or the yoking or unyoking, if you will, if you want to get into definitions. How does this play into finding that balance and having and adjusting one's worldview so we can have a better place tomorrow?
Okay, well, I'm going to start by using the analogy to Joel's approach to yoga, because
mm-hmm.
there's different approaches to yoga, and I based this on Joel's approach, which is, as I said, a non-authoritarian feedback-based approach, so that if you're doing a posture in your body, you're paying attention to the feedback. Is it too tight? Am I in pain? Am I not in pain? What's going on? Well, in relationships, feedback is also very important, to paying attention to learn how to read the feedback that you're getting from another person. It's not necessarily just what they're saying, but it could be their body language, their tone of voice, their facial expression. And just Joel's approach to physical and mental yoga is exploratory. So our approach to the yoga of relationships is exploratory. A lot of people get stuck in painful, frustrating knots where they are polarized, and they each say the same thing over and over, arguing, and it doesn't move. It doesn't resolve. Well, the body has knots and tight spots, and we recommend exploring them in yoga. Well, we recommend exploring them also in the yoga of relationship. And so as soon as you start to together explore a tight spot in relationships, then that shifts you out of arguing and each winning and each trying to be right and blaming and putting the other down or this kind of thing into a curiosity that's totally different. We call that raising the discourse level. Once you're both exploring together, say a knot or a difficult issue, you can still, the issue doesn't immediately go away, but the attitude you have towards it and towards each other is more united in the exploration of the separation. So that's just an example of approaching the yoga of relationships, extending Joel's self-exploration approach to a relationship exploration approach. Because when you shift to curiosity and shift out of blame and trying to be right and win and get back at the other person, it makes all the difference in the world. That's just an example.
Mm-hmm. Joel, what was the catalyst that drove you onto this path so many years ago?
Onto which path are you talking? The path of yoga or the path of exploration?
I'm going to go ahead and go with yoga for 400, Alex. But I do want to know about also your path of exploration. But how did you get started in the practice of yoga?
I got started in the practice of yoga in a very different way than most. You know, being a highly trained and formally trained mind, one of the things that I began to be aware of is how conditioned my mind was, how, you know, repetitive in its behavior, how I could predict the way it would solve problems. And I found that that was very limiting in terms of the kind of inquiry that I was involved in. So that after I left academia and became aware of physical yoga and its nature, I became aware that the body is the same. It's habit-bound. It has its ways of doing things that are repetitive. So that I became curious. And in the early 60s, when I began to explore this, the connection between the mind and the body was very fashionable. So I thought, well, I'll give Hatha Yoga a try and see how it relates and what it does. And that's what I did. And I started doing yoga. And interestingly enough, I started doing 20 minutes a day, you know, for a lark, kind of. And in the course of the next year and a half, I didn't miss a day. And then my yoga began to increase in time. It was something that really connected into me and something that made me realize that really understanding the conditioning of the body begins to open up the mind too, and vice versa. You have a two-way street here, not a one-way street.
Hmm. And how about you, Diana, as far as the yoga is concerned? Because I know the two of you practice together.
Well, I was a professor at Duke, and I had just finished my doctorate when I heard about yoga and got interested in Eastern thought and meditation and these things, and I just began doing them while I was working there. And I got so interested that it led me to come out west on a spiritual quest, and then at the end of that quest, I have landed in a workshop in Joel's house and studied with him. And then I brought him out east to teach for a weekend because he was teaching weekend seminars around the country and the continent at that time. And I just got more involved in the way he was thinking, and it was actually, he was saying the lectures that are in the Passionate Mind at the time, and I felt it was really quite revolutionary. I'd always been an enthusiast for causes that I felt were really cutting edge and important, like, as I said, anti-war and anti-racism and feminism and things like that. And then this became my new big interest. And a couple years later, I came out and we developed a love relationship, which changed my whole attitude toward men. I mean, I was already liking men, but I got to trust them a lot more because as an early feminist, I had been quite angry and mistrustful of men.
Hmm. You are also multilingual.
Yeah, I love languages.
I'm curious about that and how you see the different languages as being somewhat of a barrier to people being able to communicate about their visions of not just the now, but also of the future and what we want. Because, again, we are a species of man, humankind, but we all speak different languages and we use different words in those languages to mean different things. So how do we bridge that?
Well, right now, one of the ways that it's being bridged is through a lot of people all over the world learning English, and through English kind of having become a standard of commerce and tourism and the internet and that sort of thing. And also when the British Empire was a colonial, you know, when it was colonial, then a lot of countries spoke English. So English, in a way, is partly resolving that problem for certain educated people, or not even just that. When you travel, if people want to beg money from you, they do it in English, no matter. They learn it if they're poor on the living on the streets. But I love learning languages. There's nothing like the intimacy that comes as soon as you start talking to someone in their language. Mm-hmm. And moving over into their worldview and culture, and it makes them feel you value it. So I think it's really important for English-speaking people to learn other languages little bit or more if they have talent or desire.
And do you find, as you communicate with people of other languages and countries, that they share the same kind of desire, as Joel has expressed, that you either care or you don't care, that they care?
About the world and mm-hmm. the future?
Yeah.
Well, I think that all over the world people care, although if they're struggling for survival and they're really living in extraordinary poverty, that's mostly their concern. A lot of them, like when we were in India in 82, we used to ask some poor Indians about the problems of the world, and they'd say, oh, does the world have problems too? We thought it was us, you know, in India.
Wow.
So, I mean, it really does, it's almost a privilege and a luxury to be concerned about the problems of the world, and that's why, in a way, those that can be, we're responsible for doing the best we can for the things we care about, whether it's polar bears or whatever, even putting out inspiring art or anything that is positive contribution is welcome these days.
Or putting out a book called The Passionate Mind Revisited. My guests are Joel Kramer and Diana Alstad, and we're going to continue our program here. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Are addictions ruining your life? Have you lost hope and long to discover help for a brighter tomorrow? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
Till I got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the first thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
We're pleased to have Susan Fries of Ecola Termite and Pest Control Services in the studio with us today. Susan, what is it that makes Ecola stand out in the pest control world?
Well, what makes us stand out is we've been in business now for 25 years, and we have been the pioneers for the alternative to fumigation treatments. We also were founded by the electrogun. The electrogun is 90,000 volts of electricity that penetrate wood, and they seek out and zap the termite. We do believe that there is a need for all of the methods out there. So what I say to people is that we will prescribe the best prescription for your home and for your lifestyle.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, just recently we were recognized as the best green exterminator by LA Magazine.
Thanks for being with us, Susan. To find out more about Ecola Termite and Pest Control Services, call 1-800-332-BUGS. Ecola, powerful termite and pest control as gentle as a butterfly. 800-332-BUGS.
On Wellness Talk Radio, we're asking questions, finding answers, talking about things that matter to you and your life. I'm Chris Costello, bringing you the best in wellness inspiration. Listen in as we talk with Jack Canfield, Dr. Dean Ornish, Marcy Shymoff, Hale Dwoskin of the Sedona Method and The Secret, Suzanne Summers, T. Colin Campbell, and many others. Listen in and get inspired on KZSB AM 1290 on Wellness Talk Radio.
If we leave here today, we could be 1,000 miles away. Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road. All the trouble that you know empties out as you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories.
New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank my guests, Joel Kramer and Diana Alstadt, for joining us. Authors of The Passionate Mind Revisited. You can check it out at the website joeldiana.com. All one word, no ands, no hyphens, just joeldiana.com. My final question to the two of you in the last couple of moments, and sadly, that's kind of where we put it, but why this? Why now? Whether we're talking about just the book or the work that you have that has brought you to this place today, why this? Why now?
The answer, you know, I'm going to make it very succinct. The answer is that we're in control of technology that we can't handle. Technology has pushed things far beyond our capacity to deal with.
As a species.
As a species.
And so we feel we need to have a better understanding of the way humans work that's more realistic, that looks at our violence, our predatory nature, our self-centeredness, as well as our great human potential, capacity for altruism and love, and that optimists and others often sort of downplay the problematic aspects of humans, and we feel we need social evolution that's based on awareness of who we are, that asks the hard questions and looks squarely at the problems without getting pessimistic about it,
mm-hmm.
having an evolutionary approach, which is why we call ourselves possibilists. We're looking for possibility while asking the hard questions.
Well, the hard questions do have to be asked, and I'm hoping that we have addressed some of those kinds of questions on this program, because when you start asking those kinds of questions, it really does get people to think. And it kind of goes back to the old analogy of what insanity is, the definition thereof. And we've been living it for many, many decades here on this planet and in this country in particular, and expecting a different view. I used to use the analogy of a videotape, but now we're into the digital age, and the DVDs now come with alternate endings. So that kind of goes out the window, but so be it with analogies. I want to thank
both. So we think our survival is at stake, basically,
yes.
And we need to evolve socially.
We do.
And we can only do that through better understanding who we are and how we work.
Well, let's find out who we are and find out how we work so that we can make some changes of a very positive nature. I want to thank the two of you, Joel Kramer and Diana Alstadt, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you on the program, and we look forward to talking with you further in the coming months and years. See where we are.
Thank you very much. It was a lovely interview.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Stay on the line. We're going to talk after the program is over and find out more about the two of you, and also give you the website. It is joeldiana.com, joeldiana.com. You can find out about the work that they have been doing and the work that they're working on now, the books that they have, the articles, the whole gambit. You can also listen to this interview again at richarddugan.com. Go to the radio show's page, and it'll be the first interview at the top of that page in about 20 minutes following the broadcast. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Make your world a better place for you and those around you. Until next Saturday, love to Lal. Have a great week.